When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Win number 20. It's not a phrase we've heard in the last couple of years for the Syracuse basketball team, Wes, but we can officially say the Orange got to 20 wins thanks to an 82-76 road win against Louisville. Matt D'Agostino, Wes Chang here with the Juice on the Cuse podcast from the Believe Network and Rivals.com. And Wes, It's a benchmark. I don't know if it's the same benchmark that it used to be in college basketball with the number of games these teams are playing now. But for Syracuse to get back to the 20 win mark in Adrian Autry's first season, pretty impressive as they did it kind of in the fashion they've been doing these things as of late. Get out to a good lead, see that lead dissipate in the second half, and find a way to pull out a victory, one that Adrian Autry said, you know, we're learning how to win these games now, not just be in them, but we're learning how to win these games, which is important come March. What were your thoughts on Saturday's victory against the Cardinals?
Yeah, Matt, the Louisville win, really no exception with, again, Syracuse going into intermission, up double digits, up 11. Then Mike James with 39 seconds left, pumps in a three-pointer, pulling the Cardinals to within 78-74. But Matt, I think one of the main takeaways I had is credit to Justin Taylor because he hits 4 or 6 free throws in the final 30 seconds. They kept fouling him because he was 1 for 5 to start and he'd been really struggling with his confidence. One other thing I really wanted to point out is that Taylor, Bell, and Brown played 40 minutes with Peter Carey unavailable. Qadir Copeland in foul trouble all night. You know, he only played 11 minutes before fouling out. So a really depth issue with them. So they played those three every single minute, plus Judiman's playing 37 minutes, definitely reminds you of a Jim Boeheim rotation. But to your point, they got it done. It's been a carbon copy of the last couple of games, but the carbon copy has resulted in 4 straight wins, so you can't really fault Syracuse for that.
Speaking of Qadir Copeland, I don't know about you. How many times have you lost a shoe when dunking, Wes? I'm not sure that it's ever happened to me. Certainly not on
maybe
a regular
on the 7 foot, maybe hoop. On the 7 foot hoop.
Yeah. Maybe a time or two, but, an impressive display of athleticism from a couple of plays, from Qadir Copeland on Saturday. Also, let's credit Chris Bell for not just knocking down some shots, but had 3 blocks, all emphatic in nature. And then he also had a career-high 7 rebounds, which is something Autry has been begging him to do. We saw a lot of other facets of Chris Bell's game that are teasing a little bit. He's becoming more of a complete player.
You know what? You mentioned the three blocks. You mentioned the seven career high seven rebounds. How about him getting to the free throw line nine times? Because again, that shows you that he's being aggressive. He's not just settling for jump shots. He's not just settling for a spot up three. He's getting inside. He's getting fouled. So the fact that he scored 23 points, led the team, but he did so many other things, and he was getting to the line eight of those 23 points actually coming from the free throw line. That says a lot about Chris Bell's afternoon.
I want to talk about Judah Mintz in a couple of different facets. 15 of his 21 points in the first half, a big dunk to end the half that kind of recaptured some momentum going into the locker room. He did have the technical foul. I do want to start with this. I didn't particularly like the technical foul. I didn't like that him and Adrian Autry were kind of going at it with each other, and Autry yanked him at that point. But the technical foul itself, to me, was a little shoddy in terms of the ref. You know, I think it was a natural reaction. Judah was holding on to the ball, and someone comes up behind him and tries to take it from him. He's thinking it's an opponent. He's snatching it away from him. It turns out to be the ref. I thought the ref had a quick whistle on that. I don't know about your thoughts.
Yeah, I thought the ref had a quick whistle too, Matt. But again, I think, you know, you look at the situation as a whole. As a referee, you walk up to the player and then the player to take the ball away from the player. And then again, he rips it away from the referee.
Despite his vision at times this season, does not have eyes in the back of his head, Wes, as far as I know.
Matt, I know you've been teed up for less for wearing an orange tie. So, you know, these referees have kind of minds of their own.
My illustrious assistant coaching days, yes, did lead to one technical for literally wearing an orange tie, per my sources. But that's a topic for another day. We can do another podcast later on with that. I thought it was a little quick whistle, but more.
I thought it was a quick whistle, Matt. One other thing I wanted to point out about Judah Mintz, because I put, you know, Judah Mintz's up and down day, which is the label for this segment. So you're right. He had 21 points, which is a plus. He had five assists, which is a plus. And then he has five turnovers, which is a minus. And then he picks up that technical foul and gets into with Adrian Autry on the bench and Kadir Copeland had to sub in. So I labeled it as an up and down day, obviously more up because Syracuse won and it didn't affect them in the long run. And he's been playing really well. There was that one, I don't know if you, this is in the second half now, he puts the ball behind his back twice, slipped his defender, kind of no-look, one-handed sling pass to Malik Brown for the dunk. I mean, that just shows you kind of his ability to play at the next level. I know he's kind of projected in that middle of the second round, but more plays like that, he gets into the NCAA tournament, maybe he can showcase his abilities even more.
So here's where I want to go with this next part of Judah Mintz is I'm watching and he's a very unique player. I think we can all agree on that, no matter what level that takes him to or not. But he's a very unique player in his skill set. And I think I came up with somewhat of a comp for him from the Syracuse days. And I think I want to call him an athletic. I don't even want to say more athletic because I don't think this other guy was very athletic in general. But an athletic Billy Edelin. And I'll say it because of this. The way he directs traffic, the way he can dissect the defense. There was one play on Saturday where he gets past his man and is trying to draw the big man out from under the basket because Malik Brown is there. And he is able to kind of just slow down and patiently wait for his dribble and then start to walk it back out and pulls that big man right out with him and gives him the space to feed Malik Brown for an assist. It was kind of like a puppet master almost to me, where he's got everyone on a string and he knows what he wants to do before he's doing it. And he knows how to get the defense to react to him in a way that will allow him to do what it wants. I thought Billy Edelin was very good at that. Edelin wasn't a great shooter. He wasn't a great scorer. He wasn't a freak athlete or anything. He went at his own pace and knew how to get to the spots on the floor to best set up his teammates. And it kind of clicked for me there. I don't know if you feel that that's a
I think that's a great comparison. I like, you know, they both had interesting vision. What I think the comparison is really at, Matt, is how they play, the tempo of the game they play at, right? They don't let the game speed them up. They actually slow the game down to then speed it up. And so you're right. I think the puppet master analogy is a good one. And I really like how both of them control the floor and had that vision. They're playing checkers. You know, everyone else is playing checkers. They're playing chess. So that, I think that's a really good comparison, Matt.
And I think the added thing for Judah Mintz is he can flip that switch and he can just go.
He's more athletic than Edelin was.
And make a great, he can make a great play when he wants to be able to have the control and to be able to, you know, maneuver the throttle when he needs to back it up and when he needs to speed it up, I think is a very good skill that has helped serve the Orange very well this season and last season, as a matter of fact. But this puts them, I think, you know, I don't know if it's squarely on the bubble. I don't know if it's roundly on the bubble. I don't know where on the bubble or how they fit on that bubble, but they are on it at this point because of Saturday's win and Virginia Tech beating Wake Forest, Notre Dame beating Clemson. The Syracuse Orange, if the ACC tournament was to start today, would be in fourth place and get a double bye automatically into the quarterfinals, something that did not seem like it was going to be possible just a couple weeks ago. Give me your thoughts on them just kind of resurrecting their spot in the standings. And all of a sudden you look at it and you're like, oh, all right, like Syracuse is in there.
Yeah, Matt, the net is a really funny thing because Syracuse came into the game ranked 82nd in net. And two major things happen. Obviously, one is that Syracuse got the win, and it's their ninth over a quad three team, and they are 9-1 in that quadrant, right? Because it used to be that Georgia Tech was a quad three loss, and they're now up to 134th in net with a couple wins, which means Syracuse's loss to them back in February is only a quad two loss, yet Syracuse actually drops two spots in the net rankings because you mentioned some of the wins, but then Virginia, Duke, Wake Forest, and Clemson all losing. So the path to the NCAA bid to me seems pretty clear. They're definitely on the bubble, but I've been saying this for a long time that away win or that away game, which hopefully will be a win against Clemson, really is high noon for their NCAA tournament hopes. I think if they win that, they pick up a third quad one win, and then you even pick up one win in the ACC tournament. I actually think they're in very good position to be in the conversation for an NCAA bid, despite their low net ranking. I think the low net ranking is really the thing that's dragging them down the most. But if they beat Clemson on the road, who's 25th in net, that spot's going to jump at least 10 spots. So I think they're really putting themselves in a good position.
Now, far be it from me to critique the net rankings. I did look at those same rankings as you. And as of when I looked at it earlier today, they still had listed Syracuse with 19 wins instead of 20. I don't know if that factors
in. I can tell you why, Matt. I can tell you why. Because, yes, they have 19 wins against net eligible teams. The 20th win comes against Division II Chaminade in the Maui Invitational. That's why they only have 19 wins.
That makes sense now. I'm glad I didn't have to call out.
I read the fine print, Matt.
Yes. No, I appreciate that. Is it fair to say, whether it's a win against Clemson and a good win against whoever in the quarterfinals, or if it's two wins in the ACC tournament, do we think that that is enough? Two quality wins, be it to end the regular season and in the ACC tournament, or both coming the ACC tournament, do we think that that's enough to get them in?
Yeah, Matt, so that's a great question. I think it also depends on bid stealers coming in through the lower tournaments, right? Because if you have, typically you're going to have about two or three bid stealers every March Madness. Now, if you lower that number down to one or two, as opposed to three or four, yeah, I think two wins, you know, even if they lose to Clemson and they get pick up two in the ACC tournament, or they just get two more wins with Clemson and one ACC tournament win. Yeah, I think that's enough to put them in the conversation, but you really have to watch the bid stealers in that case. On the other hand, if you pick up three more wins, I think they're solidly in the NCAA tournament. Those are my thoughts there.
Or, you know, you pick up, you can just automatic qualifier at that point and leave all the guessing game out of it at this point. But we will see what's going on with Syracuse. It's going to make for an exciting next couple of weeks for sure, as they have won four in a row, 5 of 6, and now 6 of 8 since the Wake Forest loss. To talk more about that trend and where Syracuse sits on the bubble, we'll talk to Juice Editor-in-Chief Brad Bierman on the other side of the break here on the Juice and the Cuse podcast.
This is the Cut App Read. I love betting my friends and betting them on anything. Sports games, who's fast, that's what Cut allows me to do. The Cut App is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's legal in 40-plus states. Cut has customizable odds, tracking capabilities, and an entire social network with group chats, user profiles, and rewards. All payments are accepted, no need for Venmo. Syracuse comes into Tuesday's matchup against Clemson as an 8.5-point underdog against the Tigers. I think you have to go with Syracuse there, given with how they played lately. And also, they know their season is on the line with an NCAA tournament bid. So give me Syracuse getting 8.5 points on the road. Use our promo code BELEAVECUSE, that's BLEAVCUSE, for a 10% welcome deposit bonus. Don't forget that promo code BELEAVECUSE, BLEAVCUSE. Cut, put your money where your mouth is.
Welcome back to the Juice on the Cuse podcast. Matt and Wes here. And as we discussed, an 82-76 Syracuse win over Louisville on the road over the weekend. And to talk more about it, editor-in-chief of the Juice, Brad Bierman. Brad, appreciate you jumping on here. And it's always better to talk to you when we can talk Syracuse wins. I tell Wes that all the time. So it is a good time to talk. And Wes and I have discussed kind of a little bit of what we thought of the game already, but what were your thoughts watching this one on Saturday?
Well, there's been a lot of sweet talk lately, right? I mean, when you have a winning streak like this to end the season, and you know, I want to be the first to say, you know, I misjudged this team about a month ago. I just thought there was no way that they were going to be in contention for an NCAA tournament berth. So I want to be upfront about that, because we all make predictions and not a lot of times they're going to come forward and admit, you know, misjudging the team. And I really like the contributions from everybody, and I really hope that that extends now into the postseason. It's going to be critical. Down to seven players, maybe they're going to, you know, play an eighth guy in the middle. Just love to see the contributions from Justin Taylor. You know, this was the 15th straight game, guys, with the same starting lineup. I've been dying to ask you this trivia question all season. What's unique about the same starting lineup we see with Starling and Mintz in the backcourt, Bell and Taylor, the forwards, and Brown in the middle, besides the fact that they're all sophomores?
Ooh. Maybe the first time they've had the same starting lineup for that long of a stretch since 2003.
Well, you know, I'm also a uniform guy, Wes, and so it's the only time in Syracuse history that the starting lineup has been uniform numbers 1, 2, 3, four, and five.
Like so, the Yankees or something.
Yeah, when they started baseball, right? The three hitter, the four hitter. So that's kind of an interesting little tidbit about the team this year. But the contributions, it's going to be critical, I think, to have players, you know, Q Copeland off the bench. And I'd like to see Kyle Cuff play more. I've really thought that all season. I think there have been games where he's, you know, made contributions. I'd like to see a little bit more rest. I mean, I think Coach Autry's done a great job, you know, a couple minutes before the media timeouts, getting guys out on a dead ball situation so they can get rest. But I think that's going to be, you know, critical in the postseason to get those guys rest in the backcourt, because we all know postseason games are won by the guard play. And that's been really potent for Syracuse. Judah Mintz has just been lights out here and helping this team with this winning streak down the stretch.
So, Brad, you talked about your prediction earlier, maybe about a month ago, that Syracuse wasn't going to make the NCAA tournament. We've had a lot more sample size since then. Do you think they can beat Clemson, get a couple of ACC wins, and get themselves into the NCAA tournament now?
I certainly do. I'd like to see some poetic Justin. The poetry for the Clemson game, think about it now, where you know, the season really turned, let's face it, since Wake Forest, that debacle. And we'll talk about Coach Autry in a second. But, you know, that post-game press conference is really going to stand out for this season. His heart and emotion on his sleeve, calling his team out, really unique. You just don't see that every day from a coach of a major college basketball team. 6-2 since Benny Williams then was dismissed from the team after that. So it's all coming together. And I certainly see the unique nature of the Clemson rematch. Here you have a chance on Clemson's senior day, Joe Girard's final game in a Clemson uniform there, and an opportunity to knock them off and, you know, be right in position to have that double bye in the tournament. Thoughts on the double bye? Well, of course, you want to be at least the 4-3-2-1 and have that extra day of rest. But that the interesting element this year was Syracuse not playing the final weekend. Already a week off, 8 days off, 9 days off. That's really going to be hard to tell what kind of team we're going to see. So that's one of those scheduling quirks. But certainly think they can, you know, be in that game with Clemson. It's going to be close. I certainly think they have a shot to win that. And then the other question I mentioned earlier in the season, can they win more than two games in the ACC tournaments? That they never have. It's been one or done or two and done in the 10 appearances. So if they can, Wes, to answer your question, yes, they'll be right there, because they passed the eye test to me, certainly with this winning streak to end the season, that this is one of the 68 teams that should be in the NCAA tournament.
A double bye and two wins puts them in the ACC championship game, which would be a benchmark occasion for the program for sure. Brad, you mentioned you underestimated this team, or at least have since that Wake Forest game. And I want to bring in the discussion of Adrian Autry in his first season. What do you think has been a harder challenge for him? Is it taking over for a legend like Jim Boeheim? Is it just moving over that one chair, regardless of who you're replacing, from an assistant to the head coach? Or has it been kind of finding ways to get the most out of this group, with Williams getting removed from the team, with McLeod going down for the season? Has it been those X's and O's and strategizing to get this team to 20 wins, which they have not seen in a little while?
Well, I think you filled in all the blanks, Matt. All of that, precisely that. And think about, we go back to that succession plan that they talked about. Jim Boeheim, his successor would be in place. Remember that 2 years ago? It was ironclad, in place. Well, it's pretty clear to see now what direction the university was going to go with rewarding Red Autry with the head coaching job, moving the one chair over, as you say. And I think he's more than passed the test. I mean, if we're going to grade AA in his initials, I'm right there, A minus, B plus, certainly. And I was looking at some of the coaches in year one that he's gone up against. Okay. Mark Few, Rick Barnes, Dana Altman, Jim Larrañaga, Leonard Hamilton, and Tony Bennett in the ACC. He has certainly held his own against those veteran coaches, talent-wise in Hawaii, of course. Gonzaga and Tennessee were playing better. And you caught Virginia in the first game of the ACC back in December. But, Oregon had some injuries, but I thought he coached really well against Altman there. Thought he coached really well against Larrañaga, some tough against Hamilton there, and Forbes at Wake Forest, and of course, the game at North Carolina. But he did what he had to do. Let's face it, we saw that shoulder bump with Benny Williams in the Wake Forest game. I think when we all saw that live, when it happened, we had to be thinking that something was going to happen 1, 2, 3, 4 days after that, and it did. And the team has really rallied with this 6-2 end of the season. So A-, B+, what a job he's done. And I think it's going to continue. I think the story, 20 wins, first time since 2014, and I have a hunch that maybe they will finally break through and have some sort of highlight performance in the ACC tournament.
I want one last for you here, Brad. You mentioned guard play and how that plays in the month of March. Does that factor in, do you think, and I know you're not inside those rooms, but the selection committee, is that the sort of thing, does that weigh in their minds at all? We heard Joe Lunardi say, conference record doesn't mean anything to the selection committee, which I found jaw-dropping to imagine. But the guard play has been so strong for this team. And even if they haven't shown that they are tournament quality at times this season, certainly they're playing their best basketball of the season when it matters most. And the tournament committee has got to know that the engine of this team is the backcourt. And we've seen time and time again, that recipe is a recipe for success in the tournament. Do you see anywhere where that plays into their minds at all when choosing whether Syracuse belongs in or not?
Well, I think minor, if any. I really don't. I think we're truly in this era of the quad one, quad two. They put the criteria out there, and that's first and foremost, I think, what they're going to follow. That being said, we have seen years where when a key player is injured, they do react appropriately that way. So to your point, maybe they're looking at that a little bit, but college basketball today, so much parity. I mean, just look at the ACC, teams 4 through 12 are pretty close. And I think it's that way in the other, four major conferences in the Big East. So a little bit, Matt, I think so. I think they might, but as one of those, specific things that they look at as a different wild criteria that comes in the wild card, if you will. But other than that, I think it's purely going to come down to the victories, how the point spread in these games, home, neutral court, all that sort of thing. Not as much, but I will say this. I think we're going to see Judah Mintz continue to show as a leader here in the postseason, and Starling and again, Copeland and Cuff. I really think those four can be in the mix, led by the two starters, to carry Syracuse as far as they're going to go in the postseason.
I don't know about you guys. I am told that I need to live more in the gray as opposed to being black and white. And in my life in general, I'm pretty certain I could not be a part of the selection committee. There's just too much gray area for me to delve into. It would be like quicksand for me, I think. I think I would just be I would meet my own demise at that point. But it'll be interesting. We are just a couple weeks away now from Selection Sunday, and Syracuse still got some room to show the tournament committee that it belongs in the field of 68. For Wes and myself, Brad, we appreciate you coming on once again. Editor-in-Chief Brad Bierman giving us the thoughts on the old Syracuse basketball team. We'll be right back to wrap things up.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Juice on the Cuse podcast. Wes Chang alongside Matt D'Agostino. Matt, a quick football recruiting note as we close out the show. 2025 wide receiver Michael Thomas is a Rivals 3-star prospect out of Donovan Catholic in New Jersey. He put out a top five on Friday afternoon, Syracuse making the cut. The other schools are Boston College, Illinois, Penn State, and Rutgers. He's one of the top New Jersey prospects, number 12 overall in the state, according to Rivals. We saw Fran Brown leading Syracuse to their best ranking ever since Rivals started tracking recruits. This is just another step in that encore.
Yeah, if you tell me top recruit from New Jersey, I assume Fran Brown is all over him at this point. And the competition, I don't want to call it not formidable, but no, you know, powerhouse programs there really outside of Penn State being the best of the bunch. But certainly the way things have gone, you got to like Syracuse's chances for Fran Brown to pull him in. So good as always here in the Syracuse football universe as we are getting close to spring practice time in college football. Well, Wes, nicely done once again. I have nothing but good things to say to you after all of these podcasts. You're going to have to do something where I can make fun of you or chastise you soon. It's getting too easy for me to just congratulate you on what a fine job that you have done. So we'll look for those faux pas from Wes down the road. But in the meantime, we appreciate you listening in to the Juice and the Cuse podcast here on the Believe Network and on Rivals.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.